to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drancier. Drancier, of course, also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big show coming up today. One of our favorites, Brendan Batchelor, will join us at 12:30. The Canucks are just getting on the ice at practice as well, so we'll have some live updates on what's going on at Canucks practice, and of course, a game to break down from last night as well. What's going on, Drancer?
You okay?
Yeah, having some acid reflux or something here just to start the show. That's always nice. Love that.
I'll step in here. Let me.
No, I'm
let
fine
me,
now.
Let
I'm
me carry
now.
The line. Let
no,
me carry the line.
No.
No.
No, I'm fine.
You're not deferring?
I mean, you can say something, but you don't have to, like, step in and take control.
I got you, man. I got you. I got your back. Canucks' early season win streak comes to an end. And in sort of a mixed, uninspiring and massively inspiring fashion, over the course of a 4-3 overtime loss at Rogers Arena to the Carolina Hurricanes last night. We'll get into more of this in the whiteboard, but there's a lot of conversations, I think, stemming from last night, right? Pettersson's ice time, mm-hmm. and Rick Tocchet's commentary about it post-game. You know, JT Miller clearly at less than 100%, and not at the top of his defensive game last night, although I think, you know, overall was pretty good given what I think he's playing through. And then, you know, the whole what happens in those non-Hughes minutes and on and on. And honestly, Jamie, I feel like all of that misses the point. Like, I feel like there was something very special that we witnessed at Rogers Arena last night. And for whatever reason, no one is talking enough about it. So we will when we open the whiteboard.
Yeah, we'll get right into it. Let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks. You all right?
I'm trying to jump in there.
You're very excited. You're clearly very excited.
I'm fired up.
For today, October 29th, the headline is the Canucks lose 4-3 in overtime against Carolina. So, as you said, the win streak comes to an end. Still only
scribble it out!
Still
no!
only the one regulation loss.
But headline,
I know there's one player that you want to talk about in particular.
The headline coming out of last night should be as follows. Quinn Hughes, best player on the planet? Question mark?
Best currently healthy player on the planet?
It's in play. I'm telling you, it's in play. This Carolina Hurricanes team has rolled through the Western Conference and just absolutely demolished, like, the Flames, the Kraken, the Edmonton Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
On the shot counter, on the scoreboard, right? They come into building after building, and they control 60%+ of shot attempts, and they play in the opposition's end, and they make the other team look silly on just about every breakout, every retrieval opportunity, and every breakdown, which they seize and skate a million miles toward the other end of the rink. And there were moments in which that happened to the Vancouver Canucks.
Yep.
Over the course of Monday night's overtime loss to the Hurricanes. However, there were 20 minutes in that game in which Quinn Hughes was on the ice 5-on-5, in which the Canucks out-Carolina'd Carolina, in which, even against the masters of control, the Canucks had a trump card on their back end capable of completely wrecking what that game was, where it was played, how it looked. And it was number 43 wearing the captain's C in blue. Black, I guess, last night. Like, what we saw from Quinn Hughes, the rare slapshot goal, the puppet master act, but this time doing it against literally the most difficult possible opponent to do it against in the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, I think we're sleeping on it. I really do. Like, as much as we talk a lot about Quinn Hughes, I think we're sleeping on it, and I think the league is. Like, I really do think there's been so much oxygen spent talking about certainly Elias Pettersson, but also, you know, I think JT Miller, given some of the huge goals that he's scored, right, over the course, yep, of the season.
Thatcher Demko
status, the emergence of Kevin Lankinen. Like, there's lots of storylines going on. The Canucks win streak. There's lots of storylines here. But Like, fundamentally, I think to understand what we've seen through eight games this season, I think you have to come to a realization of what exactly is happening, right? And I think the following things are true. Elias Pettersson, not close to the apex of his powers at the moment, mm-hmm. either as a two-way player or as a scorer. JT Miller, not close to 100%, it seems, right? And last night, for example, like if you go look at the underlying numbers, you'll see, hey, JT Miller, with JT Miller on the ice, the Canucks outshot the Hurricanes 12-9. Well, it was 12-7 in the 11 minutes that he spent with number 43 and 0-2 mm-hmm. in the other 3.5 minutes. Like, right now, there is one engine on this team that is firing, but it's firing at such a high level that even though Thatcher Demko's out indefinitely, even though Pettersson has had his struggles, even though JT Miller has played, you know, well, but not certainly not to the standard that he played at last year yet, right? This team is still managing elite results, is still, you know, controlling play at the top of the lineup against the Carolina Hurricanes because they have one guy who's just at a totally different level than just about every opponent who comes into Rogers Arena or every opponent that the Vancouver Canucks go visit. The list of guys who are at this level in the league right now is maybe five names long and maybe not even, honestly. Maybe not even. Like, the level that this guy has ascended to is being widely ignored. The hockey world would prefer to talk about, like, look at what Adam Fox has got the Rangers power play doing, or look at Cale Makar's counting stats, completely ignoring that right now in Vancouver, there is a team managing, you know, high-end team-level results with one guy who is clearly head and shoulders above everyone else in terms of their responsibility for those results. He's a defenseman. There is no other player on no other team that has had this level of early season success who is, like, as key in terms of driving that team's wins and losses than Quinn Hughes is. It is a wild thing we're witnessing at the moment. And as much as there's a lot to unpack from that game, and we'll all do it, I really think that's the headline. Like, so much had to go right for the Canucks to even eke out a point last night. So much. Like, they were very fortunate in that game. But on the whole, I think they've dealt with a string of things actually breaking against them in the early going. Like, Demko, if you told fans before the season, not only would Demko miss the first eight games of the year, but we'd still have no clarity on his return timeline, and we're not seeing him even skate regularly, people would have been nervous about what this season looked like. Lankanen deserves a lot of credit, but I'm just illustrating how impurely the Canucks are running so far this year. If you were to tell fans, hey, JT Miller will be near point per game, but some of those defensive games last year are going to be eaten into by the fact that it certainly looks like he's playing through a variety of ailments. And, you know, there were a couple games where he couldn't even take draws. And, it doesn't quite look right, even though he's still scoring and scoring some, you know, big, willful goals. People would be like, oh, that doesn't sound great. I'll take it, I guess. And then if you told people about Pettersson, they literally would have had steam coming out of their ears and just lost their minds.
In fact, they do right now.
Yeah. And it's still working, and it's still working because of just how decisive and sharp Vancouver's edge is in these, you know, massive Quinn Hughes minutes, in which even against the absolute best of the best at controlling play, the Canucks have a trump card in their hand and a fastball speed that they can reach that literally no one can hit.
And I do think it's not just about giving Quinn Hughes his flowers here, but I think the level of his performance is really key to understanding what we're seeing from the Canucks in the early going here, because you look at it, right, and you take a step back, they have 11 points in eight games. Now, only four wins because they've managed their losses, right? But a 688 points percentage, that's second in the Pacific. Overall, you take a step back, okay, they're in a really good position, right? Like, they're the point projection, all of that, they're in a great position. And yet, I think there's a very understandable kind of sense of, I don't, frustration might be a little bit too strong a word, but a sense that we have not seen the best of this team, right? Pettersson, Miller, as you said, maybe not at 100%. Demko, not in the lineup. Jake DeBrusque hasn't scored yet. They haven't really found their new identity. The project on the back end, Vincent Desharnais, he's come under the microscope. There's a lot of things that I think fans were hoping to see click that haven't clicked yet. And yet, despite all that, they're here with 11 points through eight games. And really, the way to kind of resolve that discrepancy is Quinn Hughes. I think Kevin Lankanen would be a reason there as well.
A good subheader.
Yeah, but if you're trying to figure out, like, why does it feel so unsatisfying, and yet this team is also objectively in a good place in the standings through eight games, it's because Quinn Hughes has been able to make up for so much of that stuff that hasn't clicked that we were hoping to see click, or fans were hoping to see click here.
He's at such a high level right now that the club has a fair bit of margin for error and probably could have... like, they could have more things go wrong, provided that Hughes is firing at this level. We're at a point where this team's central engine is now Hughes, and where that central engine is firing at such, like, a high RPM that there aren't a lot of teams that have a higher one, right? And this is something we talked about a lot with, like, the Edmonton Oilers, right? I talked about this a lot last season when things were grim for the Oilers in the early part of the year. And my point was just that when this team turns up and gets right and just gets a few bounces going their way, they're going to have a top gear no one can match. And, you know, I still believe that, by the way, although McDavid left the game last night with a lower body injury, and this is going to be a story to track here because the Oilers haven't exactly built themselves a cushion. And I saw some reports out there about ankle injuries and on and on. I mean, if McDavid's week to week here, the Oilers' sort of status through the month of November gets very interesting from the perspective of a Pacific Division interested team like the Canucks are. But with where Quinn Hughes is sort of, like, Quinn Hughes has hit a level here now where I do think the Canucks might have one of the highest gears at the top of their lineup in the league, like certainly top five. And if we're trying to evaluate this team, not through the lens of how's the regular season going, but through the lens of can they win a cup? This emergence, even with all the sort of things that are nibbling at the edges of this team, you know, especially up front, where, I mean, aside from Connor Garland, I don't feel really confident saying yes that the Canucks have multiple play drivers among their forward group. What they're getting at the top of their lineup, whenever this top pair of Hughes and Hronek is on the ice, it is so high level that it gives this team a really, really high ceiling, like almost an incomparable ceiling in the West. If you don't have a MacKinnon, if you don't have a Kucherov, if you don't have a McDavid, or you know, a Matthews type, like, it's going to be hard to have the same sort of ceiling that the Canucks do.
Now, I do think that question, right, of, okay, if you're not just evaluating the regular season, but you're evaluating can they win a Stanley Cup, that explains why Quinn Hughes is so important, but it does also explain why there's then the focus also shifts to Miller, Pettersson, Demko, right? Because as much as you need that elite, elite, elite guy who can dial it up and who can, you know, reach that speed like Quinn Hughes can, you need support behind him as well. And full credit to JT Miller, as you say, doesn't look like he's healthy. He's 100% healthy. We know he had, you know, the incident where he left the game, couldn't take draws, even though he finished that game and played the next game as well. Credit to him for still producing, right? Set up Brock Besser, picked up another point later on in the game, so he's still producing. Obviously, with Elias Pettersson, it's such a bizarre situation right now. Who knows what's going on? And then Thatcher Demko, totally shrouded in mystery at this point. So I think it's okay. It's great. You're right that it's not getting enough recognition around the league, and maybe even here in Vancouver, what Quinn Hughes is doing. It's really important to focus on, but it's also not going to be sufficient, right? They're going to need one of their other key elite players to step up and get somewhere close to their level of capability here, right? Because Quinn Hughes is not going to be able to do it by himself for the whole season and into the playoffs.
By the way, I was sent this by a colleague, Jeff Patterson, this morning, just food for thought. And it's Vancouver's last 41 regular season games played since the All-Star break of last year. Mm-hmm. So since that All-Star break moment where the Canucks had five All-Star representatives, added Elias Lindholm, right? Everyone was talking about, I mean, they were first in the West. Only the Boston Bruins had a higher point percentage, right? It was a heady time for Canucks fans. In the 41 games since, okay, Miller's played 40 games, 20 goals and 45 points. So good, 90 points, like really good.
Yep.
Incredible. But not quite to the level of two of his last three regular seasons.
Sure.
Hughes, 38 points in 41 games. Excellent, but not quite to the 90-plus point level that he hit in his Norris Trophy winning season. Besser, 15 goals, 15 assists. 60 points, 30 goals. You love to see it. Connor Garland, 15 goals and 15 assists. 30 goals, 60 points for Connor Garland. That would be, he can maintain that pace. I think people would be pretty impressed. Elias Pettersson, 8 goals, 21 assists. So that's 29 points. It's a 58-point pace. Whew. This is a guy who's never gone below 66 over the course of a full season, and that was when he was 19. Power play's been sub 20% over that span. Okay? And the team's 24th in goals scored.
Yeah.
So when we talked a lot dating back to the All-Star break last season about like regression and the team's shooting percentage and things being overheated, like we have seen it cool. Team's still shooting an elevated, they're still converting at a high level this season, but you know, this is why the offensive evolution that this team is trying to undergo and that the Carolina Hurricanes, by the way, are also in the process of sort of trying to accomplish is so crucial, right? Because as we've seen across this team's last 41 games, not to mention what we saw in the playoffs where they generated historic lows in terms of shot totals for a team advancing as far as they did, this team needed that offensive gear badly.
Yep.
Just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Other takeaways from that game last night, and
fans are so frustrated with Pettersson. I thought that was, and so is Rick Tocchet, it seems.
Yep.
But there was like that shovel pass that he kind of mishandled, and it went out of the zone on the power play.
Well, the one that went like way off the glass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And fans lost their
minds. It didn't look good.
No, but it was a Bronx cheer, and it wasn't a Bronx. Sometimes you'll get the Bronx cheer for a power play unit.
Yes.
But that was not that. That was a specific frustration from the fan base toward an individual. At least that was my read on it. What do you think?
Oh, there's a no significant question, right? Frustration.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And the boos were out in general for the power play unit. Yeah. So it was, I think there was booing for the unit as a whole for sure. You know, Hughes had the uncharacteristic drop pass turnover right to no one. And that really got the boos out because it's the drop pass as well. And it just can't gain the zone.
And Lankinen's best save of the night was off of Seth Jarvis in that third period when that puck rimmed around and the Hurricanes were able to spring a 2-on-1, right?
Yep.
Canucks were very fortunate that the game didn't end in that moment as the Hurricanes sort of attacked against the grain. Power plays, I mean, I've been talking about it for longer than the power play's been really struggling, but they're just not getting set up efficiently. They're not getting through the zone and reliably enough or quickly enough.
Well, and even when they get in the zone, they can't settle the puck to give themselves breathing space, right? They can't actually get set up. Like, they're playing hot potato with the puck under constant pressure, even after they gain the zone. So it is problems in every respect with the power play, right? Getting set up, gaining the zone, all of it is a massive problem. And Tocchet said there's going to be some changes. That'll be something to monitor when we get reports from what's going on at practice.
And all that said, I did think there was one moment where they did set up a brilliant chance, right? Great team-level passing off the entry, efficient setup. Puck goes down low. It's fed to Brock Besser, and then he heals it from a scoring chance position. Mm-hmm. It's just like, that summarized the night, right? It was just like, they finally cracked it, right? They finally made the 6 consecutive skill plays they needed to set up the glorious chance. And their most, like, how many Canucks players would you rather have getting that feed, right? None. Zero. Especially given the position on the ice, because you'd take the right-handed shot. Like, even if you're like, oh, Miller, maybe. Yeah, that's fair. But not in that spot of the ice. And he heals it. I mean, that's going to happen to Besser once in every 1,000 opportunities. But it always seems to happen to a player when their particular unit seems to be misfiring.
I just want to mention from yesterday on the show, Frank Saravalli from the Daily Faceoff, and no surprise here, and this was kind of
a broadsheet,
yeah, and this was kind of a running bit for us last year, right, where it was, if there was nothing else on the broadsheet, it was Canucks are, you know, surveying the market, they're looking for a top 4 defenseman, and Frank confirms yesterday on Canucks Central of Sat and Dan that, in fact, yes, the Canucks are already canvassing the market, trying to see what it looks like out there, and specifically for defensemen. So that's no surprise. I want to talk more about the blue line and what the changes we might see, but there you go from Frank.
Yeah, and look, Brännström played a great game last night, and the non-Hughes minutes were still a problem for the Canucks.
Yep.
Like, that's how significant the issue is, right? I thought it was a tough game after a string of strong ones from Vinny Deharnay. Canucks seemed to be considering what to do with their pairs before the game anyway. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Juulsen among sort of the 6 Canucks defenders mm-hmm. who take first, unless Forbert's ready to come back. But either way, like, I would expect DeHarnay to be on thin ice with Forbert's status and the fact that the Canucks were already considering playing Juulsen on Monday night. So we'll sort of the DeHarnay experiment. I think we've seen the good and we've seen occasionally the frustration that's going to be part of this experience. And we'll see what it looks like after Christmas, right? I do think there's still time to be given some of the unique attributes and some of the good things that we've seen. But last night was an example of what it might look like when it seems like a round peg square hole.
And on the lineup notes for the whiteboard, I believe the Canucks are practicing right now.
Sorry, I just want to quickly say this one stat because I quickly looked it up after we'd moved on from the subject. Shot attempt rate on the power play in the NHL. This is actually 5-on-4 specifically. Okay. Canucks 72 shots an hour. To put it into context, there's only one other team below 80 shots per hour. It's the Montreal Canadiens, and they're still 6 shot attempts an hour ahead of the Canucks. Like, the Canucks are last in this category
by a mile.
By a mile. A country mile. And
that's tough.
Yeah, it's really bad.
They got to figure something out there. And that's going to be, look, one of the things to watch for. And again, they're practicing right now. I haven't seen any line tweets or anything like that. We're going to talk to Batch in the next segment. So maybe we can get
his real time
commentary on the situation. But obviously, spots to watch. I mean, you mentioned DeHarnay potentially coming out of the lineup. Could Noah Juulsen get back in?
Or Derek Forbert.
We saw Elias Pettersson's line really get reduced ice time. Nils Höglander gets bumped off that line. Talkett, very frank, says, I didn't like Huggy at all. Hoggy at all last night.
You knew it was going to happen the moment that the third goal of the game, Carolina's second goal, there's a back-checking sequence. It's one of those back-checking sequences where I don't think Höglander or Pettersson could have gotten back into the play to make a difference anyway, but the optics on it, watching the highlight.
You still got to try. Still got to hustle.
And I was just like, you know that a coach is going to like look down at the whiteboard and watch it and just be mad. And fair enough. Like I knew right then and there that was going to be something to watch for, and they got fourth line deployment, and then obviously Höglander got dropped for Archdeep Baines in the third period.
And so that line's composition and how he tweaks the line, something to watch. And then the power play. He said also, frankly, like, yeah, there's got to be some changes. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean personnel changes, but you hear the way he talked about the guy, guys not moving their feet, working hard enough, guys playing lackadaisical.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not a word you want to hear your coach say, especially not Rick Tocchet say about your play, even on the power play. So going to be very interesting to see if they do some power play work today at practice, what it looks like. We'll get an update from Batch on that in a few minutes here. Playoff standings update. Now, I wanted to bring this up because of the Connor McDavid thing. So the Canucks still at 106-point projection in Dom's model. And I believe, he must be factoring in now some missed time for Connor McDavid, because the Oilers have dropped. Yeah, I know they lost last night, but they've dropped to 102-point projection.
Right.
So that kind of illustrates who knows exactly how much time he's, missed time for McDavid he's building into this model. We'll see what actually manifests. But all of a sudden, in this model, the Canucks are favored to win the Pacific Division, partly because they've maintained, they have 11 points in 8 games, and partly because of the uncertainty around Connor McDavid. Now, it could be a massive opportunity. You don't want to see, obviously, the best player in the game not be available, but it could be a massive opportunity for the Canucks.
And gambling odds, which I want to bring up, this futures market just to illustrate my point. Cale Makar favored to win the Norris Trophy at this point, given his point per game production, -110. Adam Fox in second at +500. Quinn Hughes in third at +750. Hey, odds makers, and also my PHWA colleagues, watch the games. Watch the games. This is getting ridiculous. There's one guy at a totally different level than the two guys with shorter odds than him, and people should just like watch the games because it's evident. So clear.
All right. Well,
you can see it or you don't know how to watch hockey, period.
There you go. We'll leave it there. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Brendan Batchelor joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.